international break, but we need a bit of football chat on the Luton Town Supporters Trust podcast. So we're going to do a deep dive. It's a fair bit been going on recently. So let's go through it all. Alongside me to chat about the most recent events, I've got the Lutonian journalist, James Cunliffe. I've got Town fan, Dan Barrett-Davis. And do not adjust your sets. You might want to adjust your sets, but don't adjust them. We've got Tony out of hibernation. Tony, welcome back, Tony. I was going to say by popular demand, but actually there's been absolutely no demand whatsoever.
There's been a demand to get you off.
Well, I'll see you later then. I'm going home.
Tony is back and we're going to do a deep dive. We're going to look at the state of football. How broken is it? Should points deductions happen in the Premier League? How many points should be deducted? And we'll have a little look at the relegation picture over the course of the remainder of the season. All that and lots more, as always, after this intro.
Can you believe it? We are Premier League! Yes!
I love this town. I love this town. I love this town. You know what I love about this town is actually you. Everyone in it has got these massive souls.
We're looking for people.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along to another episode of the Luton Town Supporters Trust podcast. As I said before the intro, the entire gang is back for this one. Our latest and probably last deep dive of the season in light of the fact that it's the last international break and it's full on football from here until the end of the season. Coming up on this episode of the podcast, we will chat Nottingham Forest points deduction. Everton have got a case to come as well. We'll probably touch on that. It's going to be an independent regulator in football. We now know that to be the case because it was put forward to the government last week. We'll also look at the relegation picture. And there's a couple of players that I really want to focus on just before we're done. So lots to do. Let's get cracking. And Tony, as you're back, may as well start with you. Came out last week that Nottingham Forest was deducted 4 points from their total. It would have been 6, but they got 2 off for good behaviour. Where are you with this? First of all, I mean, there seems to be an awful lot of sympathy with regards to points deductions, both Everton when that happened and now Nottingham Forest. So do you share that kind of sympathy in light of the fact that we've had a points deduction in the past? Obviously, completely different scenarios, which you'll paint for me. And do you feel that the points deductions, if you don't have any sympathy, which I believe you don't, do you believe that the points sanctions were strong enough?
Before I say anything, I'll just say you guys are happy because the glamour and sex appeal is back.
Where's the nice new top I've got on, I have to admit. So, yeah.
Where is it?
I thought green was a crap colour personally, but if it works, it works.
I've... It's not strong enough. I have no sympathy for them at all because they knew the rules and they broke the rules. So they got to take the consequences. And I think, in particular with Nottingham Forest, I think it's just a slap on the wrist. I really do.
Speaking of slaps on the wrist, you'll get one if you keep calling them Nottingham Forest. They're Notts Forest on this podcast.
You just did call them Nottingham Forest, to be fair, Kev.
Yeah, you did. You did. Okay, I've got no beef with Notts Forest.
You will have now you've said that.
Probably, yeah. But one of the things that particularly annoyed me with it as well was this getting 2 points back for cooperating with the commission.
Yeah,
that annoyed me because I think it should be expected that clubs will cooperate, and if they don't cooperate, they should have extra points added on.
I mean, to play devil's advocate, which is probably going to be my job on this episode.
I think so.
Good luck. Is that 2 points there to kind of sway them from appealing and speed up this entire process? And if they do appeal, they'll say, right, fuck you then. We've given you 2 points off for good behaviour. You're no longer behaving well. You can have your 2 points added on.
It could be, but it's very difficult to tell because I don't think the whole process has been that transparent, to be honest with you. And they seem to be making it up as they go along because what I think is there should be a punishment set before any transgressions so they know exactly this is what they're going to get Because it could be construed that there's favouritism. You know, they favour one club over another, and that's not right. And I think the whole thing has been handled very, very badly. They haven't thought it through properly. And I mean, whatever happens in a points deduction, you're going to upset somebody anyway. You're going to, the fans are not going to see it as just. I mean, as I said, you've only got to look at our deductions. And I mean, I think everybody in the football world, apart from the Football League and the FA at the time, thought that our punishments were draconian and unjust, in particular the FA one, because it was our club's secretary that reported the transactions. The FA wouldn't have known anything about it otherwise. Mm. And then they come in and they slap us, and you're then thinking they're making an example of us. But I think it could be handled better, as I've said. There's got to be more cooperation between the Premier League and the Football League. So there's consistency with punishments. So, you know, you've got in the Premier League for a club going into administration, 9 points. In the Football League, it's 10 points. Well, why isn't it the same for both?
Yeah.
That's the problem here, isn't it, James? Because if you're going into administration and you're only getting a nine points for basically insolvency in the Premier League, none of these punishments can be anywhere near 9 points, right? But sometimes the size of them, let's say, for example, Chelsea are said to be in all sorts of shit for going into next season. Their breaches are going to be an awful lot more than Everton and Notts Forest if they don't address it in the summer before the 30th of June. But they can't get anywhere near a 9 point deduction, because whatever they breach it by is nowhere near insolvency. That's just reckless financial business management. So that being so low, and Tony said that they should be the same, my personal opinion is it should be more in the Premier League, because you're gifted 100 million large as soon as the season starts. So you've basically got 100 million quid that the Championship team hasn't got. The Championship team gets what, 8 to 10 from their TV deal? So you've got a 90 million advantage. So if you're spunking that and going insolvent, surely your punishment should be a hell of a lot more than 9 points when it's only 10 points. When you ain't got a pot to piss in further down the pyramid. So if they move that up, they move that threshold up, because it doesn't look good in the Premier League if a owner makes his club insolvent when it's given 100 million to start off with. So let's say you move that up somewhere in the, let's call it a ballpark of 15 to 20 points. Now you've opened up the amount that PSR breaches can be. So much more, so it will have so much more of an effect, rather than, I think the general consensus is that the Forest ones are, as Tony said, a slap on the wrist one. It's a hefty slap on the wrist, which could have significant consequences down the line, but it's not strong enough that it definitely has those consequences. So surely the first thing that has to happen is the insolvency issue has to be more than 9 points in the Premier League. And I understand it's the Premier League clubs that make these rules, and that'll be turkeys voting for Christmas, but 9 points doesn't seem anywhere near strong enough if a PSR breach is going to yield points deductions.
The whole process is well out of whack with what fans would expect, or across the whole board. What Tony mentioned there about there being no idea of what the punishment is. I didn't have any sympathy, and I still don't, for Everton. But I do have a sympathy for their point of view when it comes to Nottingham Forest. Going, well, we got 10 reduced to 6, and they got 4. It was initially being talked of as 8, and then 6, and then they get 2 given back for being nice. And that is just nonsense. The Premier League's rules and all of this are so ripe for manipulation. It's untrue. And that's essentially what they've done here, because you should be, like Tony said, be cooperating with an investigation. And if you don't, then there's extra punishments. But you shouldn't be getting extra off. That's just what you should be doing. Because if you've got nothing to hide, then prove it. And if you are messing about, then I'm sorry, but the suspicion's on you.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree. I really do hope that the mitigation that they were given their 2 points back is to stop them appealing.
Can I just,
because if they do appeal, it's going to take it beyond the end of the season, isn't it? Whereas if they don't appeal, they know full whack what their punishment is. It just takes out one club who could mess the whole shenanigans up after the last ball is kicked this season. So I'm hoping it's that. But if they do appeal, I would want them to get them 2 points back the very second that it's tabled, because suddenly you're no longer cooperating with it, i.e. you're dragging your heels in the sand now.
I'm in a slightly different viewpoint to James, because I have no sympathy for Everton or Nottingham Forest, or Notts Forest as you prefer, Kev. Because I had this discussion with some Forest fans, and they were saying, well, it's very unjust because we tried to sell Johnson and we only got offered 30 million and it was a few weeks until we got the bid in of 45 million. So hang on a minute. In that same period, you spent 42 million on players. Yeah. So if you knew there was a possibility of doing this, why did you buy those players?
Yeah. I heard that you were on BBC Five Live talking to them, and they got some Forest fans on there with you.
Yeah.
And I mean, we know full well on this podcast how deluded they are, and they just proved themselves to be there. It's like that they're like, but the rule shouldn't apply to us in some way. And they were talking about how this PSR situation is going to be phased out in a couple of years, isn't it? And they're like, well, it's only going to last a couple of years. You're like, but it's in place now, and you breached it. So you get the
penalties. If they change the rules, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
And if they go to the European system where you can spend 85% of your turnover, that's fine. That applies to everybody. But as James had just said, those are the rules at the moment. And unfortunately, through your own fault, you felt foul of them. And, you know, it's also got to be mentioned with Everton that they took out loans which were primarily supposed to be to finance their stadium construction. They used those money, you know, a couple of those loans, to finance the club and run the club and pay wages. So there's got to be some sort of reckoning on it, and a proper reckoning.
I mean, the thing that gets me, Dan, with regards to the Forest one is, I mean, they're coming out with all this Brennan Johnson stuff, which is fair enough. I believe Atletico Madrid had a bid or an offer of somewhere in the vicinity of £30 million on the table. They wanted more than £30 million. That's their right. But if you breach the rules for the difference of £15 million, that's potentially sending you into the Championship where you're losing a hell of a lot more than £15 million. So if I'm weighing up the lesser of two evils, I'd probably let Johnson go for £30 million. However, having not let Johnson go for £30 million in June, which would have complied with all of this, he played 3 games for Nottingham Forest this season. I'll be kind to them. Nottingham Forest this season. He played 3 games. Now, if he'd broken his leg in any one of those 3 games, he's not going nowhere for no money whatsoever. So you can't have your cake and eat it. Now, if he didn't play a single game this season, right, then they could kick up a bit more of a fuss that they wanted more money for him and they got more money for him and happy days. You risked him breaking his leg or any kind of significant injury, ACL, call it, whatever injury it is, that stops Tottenham from signing him, then what happens? Then you're absolutely fucked. So I have absolutely no sympathy on the Brennan Johnson argument. The other thing, they came into this Premier League. They came into the Premier League 1 year ahead of us, right? They came into it, and the first thing you noticed when you watched Match of the Day last season and a Notts Forest game, there's no sponsor on this yet. Yeah. So that's £20 to £25 million just for a basic sponsor that could have closed that gap. You've been completely and utterly mismanaged by a basket case of all basket cases.
Puts Gurney to shame, doesn't it?
And now it's coming back to haunt you. Now, where the problem lies with Notts Forest is they've spent all of this money on all of these players, which is fine. And they probably thought they were going to get a fine at the end of it.
Yeah.
They thought, oh, no one's going to really take all of these rules seriously because we're football and we're so much bigger than all of these rules and all this, that and the other. Then Everton got done, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh shit, things are getting serious. But it's still fine because we're still Notts Forest. We brought all these great players. We'll be absolutely fine. We can cover a points deduction. The problem is they brought a whole sack of shit, which has got them a whole 3 points above Luton in the table. And they've now taken a 4-point deduction, which has got them above Luton, and the panic stations are on. If they'd brought these players that got them where they wanted to be, 10th and above, no problem. They'd have taken their little 4-point slap on the wrist. We still got our fantastic squad and everyone would have cracked on. The whole crux of the problem is they've managed themselves badly. They've brought shite And now they're really, really, really close to paying the ultimate price for it all.
Serves them fucking right and all, when you put it like that. But no, I mean, let's just compare if we just compare Forest to Luton for a minute, and Forest fans, shut up while I make my point. Okay, so we spent...
They were behind the camera, are they?
No, but they're in the comments, keyboarding.
They were awfully quiet after Luke Berry scored against them, I have to say that.
That sounds very...
So we come up, spend £25 million, buy about 12, 13 players. And all right, we've been 18th most of the season and we're up against it. We're still up against it now. They've spent 250 million quid in 2 years on 140 million players. Like you said, most of them utter shite, barring the likes of Gibbs White and that. And they're no better off. Now, are you telling me as a Forest fan, you're happy with that, for one? Two, are you happy that the Premier League have just decided, we're going to take this rule that we've made up seriously and make it up as they go along, because that's what the Premier League does? And three, are you happy that your club voted against siphoning some of the money down the Football League, bearing in mind you spent 23 of the last 25 years in amongst all that, in the deep in the EFL, shall remind you. Now, what defence have Forest got when you put it like that? They've got none. They've spent more money than they were awarded for being in the Premier League in the first place, wasted it on shite, Jesse Lingard being the ultimate key holder there. And then they've tried to flog, well, not flog Brennan Johnson, they've tried to, I don't think they wanted to get rid of him, but they thought, well, if he's the biggest asset we've got out of this lump of shite that we've got, he's the one we're going to make the most money out of. And then they've
He's the only one that they could sell that they got the whole amount for on their accounting.
I mean, what they could have done,
you only get the profit.
Yeah,
they're not selling anyone for a profit, are they? Because they're all crap.
No, I mean, what they could have done is try to get rid of three or four more at cost, but then obviously that weakens your squad. So do you take your best player out? I mean, if it were Luton, do we risk selling Ross Barkley for 15 million, try and stay in the Premier League? Not sure I'd do that with our squad, if I'm honest.
But the fact is, you shouldn't have the choice, should you?
You
should have to comply to these rules.
Yeah.
And if you don't, by choice, therefore, comply to these rules, your punishment should be a hell of a lot heftier than 4 points, which is ultimately a win and a draw.
It should. And in Forest defence, I think they came up unexpectedly, because I think when Cooper took over in November, they were bottom six of the Championship, and fair play to them, they did a great job, but they had to change the squad completely because that squad wasn't going to compete in the Premier League
in the Premier League. This is the biggest bugbear that I have.
But then why
this?
Spend 250 million quid? We've spent 25 and we're in the same position,
This is my annoying thing. Oh, we've got to compete in the Premier League. You do not have to compete in the Premier League the very second you get into it.
No.
You have to finish 17th and get another season, and then you start building. Who are the most successful teams at doing this? Brentford. How did they do it? They just avoided relegation. They progressed. Yeah. They kept on progressing. Brighton. They just avoided relegation. Yeah. They progressed. They kept on progressing. You don't have to get promoted, particularly out of the playoffs, and suddenly think that you're going to be into Europe or any of those malarkeys. You don't go from being the corner shop to being Tesco in one jump.
But there is wider implications on this as well.
Mm.
Because if you look at it, and heaven forbid we had an unscrupulous owner in the Premier League. What is that owner then thinking and talking to his club and saying, right, we'll overspend 100 million, okay, and we'll get better quality players in, because as a squad with those better quality players, we'll win more points than what we'll take in the points deduction when we get punished. And I think that is probably the most important thing.
And that's why
for the Premier League.
That's why the insolvency punishment has to be a lot greater to give the punishment for PSR breaches a lot more room to move. You mentioned right at the start, James, that Everton initially had a 10-point deduction. Well, the committee that dealt with that were like, well, they can't be deducted more than going out of business, because they haven't gone out of business. So they can't possibly get a 10-point starting block. And obviously this Notts Forest one, the Premier League wanted 8 points. The commission started on a base point of 6 points. But again, it's all been the only kind of rule interpretation that we have to start off with this thing is that 9 points for insolvency. So you're never going to get anywhere near a 9 point deduction for just breaching a 3 year rule, right? You're not. It's just because it's nowhere near as close as it is. So until that insolvency thing goes up, these punishments are just going to be there for Tony's manipulation scenario. And we're in a world now where Chelsea are in the shit. It's widely reported.
Can they you need see anybody buying their casino for over 100 million?
Well, I mean, it's not, but it's not, is it? They need to make profit on these. But it's actually, who are they going to make
500 million.
They've also got Newcastle who can spend whatever they want. What's the deterrent from them doing that? Finishing second or third in the league, taking their points deduction, still finishing fourth and getting Champions League football. There is no deterrent for that. Forget the fact that Everton and Notts Forest are fighting relegation now because of their points deduction. They're fighting relegation because they're overspend. Maybe not Everton, but certainly Forest. Their overspend did not create the squad strong enough for their heads when they started this overspend. Everton are a different ball case. They've got a new stadium and everything else. They've not just overspent on a shit playing squad. They've overspent elsewhere as well. Forest haven't. Theirs is literally all down to the repairing that they did to that squad that Dan said they didn't think was strong enough to go up. But the punishment now that we're seeing it clearer and clearer. So let's look at the Notts Forest one. It's 3 points for a breach. That's what they were given. Another 3 points for the severity of it. So 6 points, and then they got two off for good behaviour. So let's say the next one doesn't get the 2 points off for good behaviour and they spend 35 million quid more than what they want. So let's say that next one's Chelsea. They get a 6 point deduction, but the players that they've brought actually do deliver the hype and get them up into the top four. The 6 point deduction's nothing. So these things need to be changed, but the Premier League is the 20 clubs of the shareholders, and they're the ones that are going to have to agree, and only seven of them have to agree to get anything moved and everything else. And they're not going to agree because, as I said right at the start, it's Turkey's voting for Christmas. So this all comes down to one individual now, doesn't it? And that's the one that's just been put on the table for the independent regulator to be given the power to change things like this. Reading the bill, he or she's not going to get that power. So football's, for the want of a better phrase, fucked.
It is. It's ripe for manipulation all over the place. And
yeah,
with the Chelsea one, for instance, we haven't heard what's coming down the pipe for them, although we expect that there is going to be something. It's being reported that they have put aside £150 million for legal fees because they know they're going to be in bother. I don't know if that's true, but they've got so much money to throw at it, they can do that. I mean, they're not even in risk, proper risk, really, of relegation, are they? But if you take the Forest example, you just do your calculations, don't you? You overspend as much as you possibly can. Hopefully you have a bit better football now than they do, buying some better players, get further up the table, then you're part of the Premier League elite, and you could do what Brentford did, except by bending the rules, possibly breaking them. And it's not on. And so that's why everybody was calling for the independent football regulation. You know, on the one hand, it's great that it's being moved through Parliament. It got introduced last week. It's not law yet, so it's not actually here, but we expect it will be because it's got cross-party support. But they've taken some of the biggest elements out of it or watered them down significantly. So when whoever comes in, and who's, listen, I don't want to like throw words around like corruption and stuff, but the possibility is there if clubs at the top echelon of the league have so much money, like I've just explained there about the potential for Chelsea to put that much money aside for legal fees, allegedly. I don't know if they've done it. This is just what's being reported. Then whoever this independent regulator is could just get people will, and they already do, complain that there's brown envelopes going all over the place. And there'll just be more of that, and there'll be no faith in that person either.
And this is all without considering Manchester City as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've not brought Man City into the equation because they are a different thing, you know, what they're being accused. These are simple PSR breaches, right? Over a 3-year deal, you put your accounts out for 3 years. You can see whether you've gone above or below it.
But they should be black and white, though, shouldn't they? If you've broken the rules, breached those rules, it's black and white. I don't know why they're going to hearings and things. I know you should be able to put your case across, but if you've broken or breached those things based on how much you're allowed to spend financially, why are you going to hearings? Here's the punishment. You knew what was happening.
Yeah.
There you go.
And they know the deadline for selling a player was 30th of June. Yeah. So why they thought they could hold on to Johnson for longer than that? There's no excuse for it. Doesn't matter. Just for the sake of 15 million, it doesn't matter.
Let's get it right. They just didn't think there'd be any comeback on it.
Well, no.
The comeback has come because the independent regulator is very close to coming into thing. The reason why I'm not going to include Man City in this conversation is theirs is doctoring the amount of sponsorship money that they got and what they might have got. That's a completely different thing. Yes, we all want Man City to be done, but this is just strict, straight up PSR breaches, which is going to take place for the next 2 or 3 years. As I mentioned right at the start, this is a 3-year period. Anyone who's been messing around has still got 3 years of overspending on their thing. Man City is different. We all want it sorted. We want it sorted as quickly as possible, but it is a whole different ball game. Whereas Chelsea, if and when they're charged, won't be. They'll be exactly the same. So really then, Tony, what the Premier League needs to do is the Premier League needs to get this administration
some ball.
Well, it does need to do that, but also let's give
proper ones and all.
Let's give the Premier League an ounce of defence here, right? They don't manage the situation. All they do is press the charges and then take it to the independent commission. Has to be an independent commission because all the Premier League have is a chief executive who works on behalf of the 20 shareholders, which is the football clubs. So none of the shareholders can get involved because obviously they've all got their invested interest. Now, the Premier League wanted more for Everton and more for Forest than what was dished out. So it's not all just a Premier League issue. But as I said right at the start, this nine point insolvency thing is absolutely killing anything that the Premier League want to do with this. I think the Premier League want to be really, really strong on this. The wording in the Everton report suggested they wanted to be really strong on it. And they don't seem to have gone as strong on the Notts Forest one. I suspect because Notts Forest were only in their league for one of the 3 years. I hope that's the case anyway. But certainly with regards to Everton, they wanted to be really, really strong. Hence that 10-point initial figure. But you're just never going to get a 10-point deduction through when your insolvency is 9 points. So the first thing they need to do and do it very quickly is get that shifted up, maybe even doubled up to 18. Then that gives them so much more scope then to put their own stronger PSR breaches in. So if they've got, let's say they double the insolvency, it's up to 18 points. They could go to these commissions and say, right, 12, 15 points, there's my starting point. And work from there. But they can't do that now because that 9 points.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'd make it 20, just round it up. Just to make a point for them. Just stop doing it.
Yeah. one of the things that I suddenly thought, and the FA have been remarkably quiet about all this. And I'm looking at it and I thought, do you know, surely there is a case there with all this is going, but it's bringing the game into disrepute.
They're checking the brown envelopes, you know, Tony, that's what they're doing.
And they're quick enough to jump on managers who criticise referees or whatever.
But the problem that you have with the FA is they're the 21st shareholder of the Premier League, aren't they? They don't have voting rights, but they're still a shareholder of the Premier League. If they get into it, then they corrupt the whole process.
And the thing with the Premier League is it's the dog wagging, the tail wagging the dog. Because if you look at it, I mean, I can remember back when the Premier League was formed and I thought at the time it was going to be a bad, bad day for football.
A lot of people
thought
this.
It really was going to be a bad day for football. Mm. And my worst fears have come to fruition because you've now got the situation where you've got an elite group of clubs at the top of the Premier League and they run it and effectively run football for their own benefit. Yeah, they make all the rules. And if you look at their owners, most of their owners have no understanding of the heritage, history and traditions of their own clubs, let alone wider football. And I'm sorry, when they talk about grassroots football and all that, it's all bullshit. They couldn't give a fuck about all the other clubs and everything else. And this is one of the things that really makes my blood boil. You know,
they just run it for their own benefit. And if they could, they'd get it through, they'd have a closed shop. Because in particular, if you look at some of the clubs that are owned by American owners, they have no concept or understanding of the promotion and relegation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want it.
No.
They don't want it. And it's, and I know we'll probably come on and talk to it about it, Kev, but this 900 million deal that failed because 10 clubs voted against it, it's self-interest. And when you look at some of the clubs, Bournemouth, Notts Forest that voted against it, and I'm thinking, where have you been?
Yeah.
Where have you come from? And you want to deny other clubs that chance to get where you are.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but I think the whole thing stinks.
Yeah, we'll park the 900 million bit because I am going to go into the independent regulator as a whole section in a minute, and it just fits much more better in there. Mm. But just to wrap up this sort of PSR thing, James, I mean, points deductions is the only punishment, right? I mean, I've seen it say, oh, it hurts the fans and things like this. But what's the other option? The other option really is a transfer embargo. Well, that doesn't solve anything, really. That just stops you signing players, but you've broken these breaches by signing players. So you've basically already done what you wanted anyway. So a transfer embargo doesn't offer it. Where this needs to be cleaned up, this PSR thing, is the speed that it happens. So Notts Forest got charged on Monday, which, you know, dates are all over the place, but you're talking something like 17th of March. Might have been a bit later than that, whatever it is. Yet the accountancy period finished on the 30th of June. So give or take 9 months from the accountancy period ending to the Forest case being heard. That's just too long. I mean, football clubs seem to produce their accounts in December or January. Why? Okay, I understand football accounts are complex. It's a little bit different to my tax return, you know.
Yeah.
I wish it wasn't. I wish it was exactly the same numbers, but it's not and never will be. But 9 months still seems a long, long time. And 6 months from 30th of June being the accountancy period end for a football club, even though tax year ends in March, but I understand the way football works with transfer windows and everything else. It has to be the 30th of June, contracts and all of that. But why are accounts only being released in December and January? We ourselves only released ours in December. Why can't that be done a bit quicker? That would then speed up the process a little bit more. And ultimately, this has to be done in an ideal world before the season starts. That's probably unrealistic. You're talking 6 weeks then. That's not possible. But there's no reason why we have to go into the turn of the year of a season. And then all of this comes up. That could all be sorted out. So before the first half of the season, so everyone knows a little bit clearer where they stand. Because the big fear in all of this is that Luton are going to finish against Fulham on May the 19th or whatever it is. Hunky-dory, 17th place, happy days, we're all on the pitch, having it large, staying up. And then 5 days later, oh no, you're not off the pitch. You're going down to the Championship. That's the thing that cannot happen. So this whole thing needs speeding up.
It does. That's the worry we've all got, really. We hope it doesn't come to that and that Luton can get themselves far enough in advance so that any points deductions or points give backs don't affect them. But it could get to the point where after the final game of the season, relegation is not decided and it gets decided outside of the football pitch. And then is there option then to do what Man City did in the UEFA case? It's a different situation, totally. But they took it to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And so it takes it even longer. So then does it then get taken to the courts? And then you've got the entirety of what the biggest league in the division, in the country, sorry, being decided by lawyers in courts. And that's just not good enough. So it comes back to this idea of why do we have to have this rigmarole? If you had a set menu of what the punishments were for each offence and you breached them, it's not like this Man City one where they're having to trawl through 10 years worth of supposed alleged dodgy dealings with people who aren't being cooperative. That's come out recently, that this is why it's taking so long. It's just simply, there's your accounts. You didn't do this, you didn't do that. It's X, Y, and Z points. Take them off. And it has to be points. It can't be financial penalties or transfer embargoes.
Because then that accounts for...
It just doesn't wash with clubs that are earning that much money.
The only ones who are going to make out of this are the lawyers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they'll all be for it, won't they?
Yeah. Well, the other way to speed up this process is not allow appeals. But in order to not allow appeals, you've got to have James's menu in front of you so that you know what's coming. Because my biggest problem with appeals, and I mentioned this on a podcast that me and James did after one of the games recently. So you've got your punishment. You then get your appeal. The appeal is 6 to 8 weeks down the line. You have every fucking politician known to man coming out who supports that club, giving it the large one. Oh, we don't deserve this. Oh, we haven't done nothing wrong. Oh, feel sorry for us. Boo hoo 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 hoo. Hello, Andy Burnham. I'm talking to you. And so now you've got a completely different appeal committee who have had his God knows ramblings in their ears for the whole 8 week period. They are influenced before they go into the room, right? If I'm trying to acquit myself of any kind of criminal charge, not that I am a criminal. Well, you might think I am, but I'm not.
So I put to debate one.
But if I'm trying to acquit myself in a criminal court of law, the jury's kept away from the media, right? They cannot be involved in any of them. They cannot be sort of misled or in any way, shape or form. But that's not the case in football. So why did Everton get an appeal reduction? No one can tell me it's not because Burnham wasn't on every single TV program known to man in the 6 or 8 weeks between it, appealing and making their case and influencing the decision. So from that point of view, I don't like an appeal. I also don't like an appeal because, as you've just said, the people that come out of this are the lawyers. Mm. Now, KCs of this world don't charge £5 an hour. They're not on minimum wage. So these teams are in this situation because they've overspent. And they're now getting free rein to hire the world's richest lawyers at quite a sum of money to, hold on, let me check my notes, to overspend even further.
I've just thought of something. I could imagine KC's eventually having agents.
It's another monster.
There's already a precedent been set. Mm. A precedent has been set a few years ago. If you appeal, you lose your golden chair.
Yeah.
That was set. You know, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And I really do think that's one of the biggest problems, the appeal terms. That's what's going to take us into the scenario where Luton don't know at the end of that game against Fulham whether we're relegated, stayed in the division or what we're up to, because the Everton case is going to have an appeal to it. We know the Everton case is going to have an appeal to it because you only have to look at the first one, and that's still not being heard for another couple of weeks. That's going to take us beyond the end of the season, and the whole thing just needs speeding up.
You could possibly get the situation as well where, not necessarily us, if we have a great run of form and go up the table. And I'd certainly like us to survive without having any.
Well, this is why Rob's league tables have never had a deduction.
Brentford,
the right approach,
get sucked into it. You could find, all right, the points deduction coming, and actually, I'm sorry, whoever it is, you're going down because they didn't get as much. And the club that's relegated then decide, hang on a minute, I'm going to put legal action in. So the thing is, it's just a total can of worms. And the thing is, when you look at it, and we've already said this, it could have been a simple solution. Just, there's a list of charges. These are what you get when you break them. Boom.
Yeah.
But of course, the powers that be don't think that way. And they end up just making the whole thing a shit show. And it's a farce.
And of course, whether Luton are in the Premier League or not next season, we're already guaranteed this situation again, because we all know that Leicester now are going to start next season on minus points if they happen to get over the line in the Championship, which is looking more and more less likely.
I think they're doing it on purpose.
It could be, but they'll get caught out in the football.
Can you
league.
Imagine that? You're going to get the start of the season. You know, when you have these prediction shows and the pundits are going to be talking, they normally, oh, these get this point and they'll finish it and it'll be like them. Well, I think this one's going to break it by £10 million. No, this one will break it by £8 million.
Yeah.
They get that. So, you know, it's just the whole thing's crazy. It's crazy.
It's taken away the element that football should be a sport, not a business, but it's a very badly run business. If you've got any business out there that's losing more than £35 million a year, they shut up. That's it. Administration gone forever. and football's just allowed to happen because it can generate the money. But soon, you know, it's just utterly ridiculous. Because more and more people now are turning their back on Sky subscriptions now and streaming illegally or whatever, pretending they live in Zimbabwe or out of Mongolia to get free football in the 90 minutes on a Saturday, and they do it. People are going to stop paying £80, £100 a month. There's your £6 billion handout that the Premier League are getting anyway. Slowly, 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 the money's been siphoned out of the football clubs, and they're all going to have to... Jack Grealish is wondering where his £400,000 a week is, and it's like, well, you know... Where does the Premier League go from there? I mean, that's further down the line and hypothetically speaking, but I could see football collapsing in on itself. I got laughed at the pub for this a few years ago.
Because
I said the boom it's going to happen.
The boom is definitely teetering on the edge of ending. But it's teetering on the edge of ending in this country anyway, because the Saudis are going to swamp the Premier League. But that is completely for another different situation.
What it really needs is one of the big six to go bang.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it needs.
Which I think the Premier League are trying to protect
that,
them.
That could happen, couldn't it? Because it could be City when they eventually get punished. If Chelsea. If you're talking Everton and Forest getting deducted single figure points penalties for what they've done. Now, let's say 50% of what Man City get charged with gets proven, then they need to be dumped. There's talk already that they get kicked out of the Premier League, which they'll then have to go to the Football League. By rights, the Football League just say, you have to start at the bottom, or maybe they have to start. I have no idea.
We don't know what they'll do.
But they should have title stripped from them, everything, for everything they've done over the last 10 years, which has been, they've been doing it under a cloud of wrongdoing if that gets proven.
That could happen.
And there's Chelsea situation as well, where they could get done as well and they could find themselves. I mean, ultimately, maybe that's the biggest deterrent if one of those big clubs does it, because then they'll have to, you know, I mean, it's happened in Scotland and it's happened in Italy numerous times. Mm. I mean, they give you proper punishments in Italy. They kick you out of the league.
They booted Juventus out, didn't they?
Well, fair play to the Scots, because one of their biggest club, Rangers, nice club that they are, you know, they dumped them all the way down to League Two. And that's what it needs to happen. It needs a, you know, tough punishment.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I don't want to see any club getting punished, because the bottom line
you
is
break the rules.
The fans. I completely understand that, but it's the fans that suffer. We suffered in 08 when it happened, you know, and it was a horrible, horrible time. Clearly, it's a
different scenario, isn't it? Because
it is different.
The people that did the crimes had fucked off.
That's the big difference.
I was going to make a point earlier around the same time. Blackpool were in the Premier League for 1 year, and then the Oystons fucked off with the money, but they stayed at the club, and that club ended up down in League Two, and they've never really. I think I've just knocked something there. Mm-hmm. And that club have never really recovered from it. They're only just starting to get better now. But it's the fans that suffer. You give a club 15-20 point deduction, fans suffer. What do the big cats at the top do? That's all right. Maybe if we try not to lose 35 million a year this time, maybe if we try and sell the fans' best player. And what I said earlier about football collapsing in on itself, fans aren't going to stop going to football, but the amount of money it costs to watch football is expensive in itself anyway. So people will stop on account of that. But the money they make from the fans doesn't even begin to touch what the clubs are used to getting off the Premier League money and whatnot anyway. But everybody else that doesn't want to pay Sky £100 a month are just going to say balls to this and just stream it free.
I think they're doing it anyway.
They are.
I'm not convinced it's set up for English fans anyway. The money comes from overseas watchers because they can't get together.
It's global, but people over there can still stream for free, can't they?
That's true. Well, I mean, if it gets to football won't collapse to the point that there will be no football to watch. We just might have to.
No, it'll just have to reset, wouldn't it?
We might have to have the situation, which would be preferable. I know for me and Tony, we'd do it like the Germans do.
Yeah.
Well, they had a rule where you cannot spend more than 40% of your income on player wages.
And every club is almost 51% represented. And there's a massive say. There's a reason why in Germany, the fans are so respected. So they either have a great time, they have a lovely time like Borussia Dortmund, the Wall of Yellow having a lovely time, or they bring in ridiculous rules that none of them are in favour of, and they all protest and they get their way because they own 50% of football.
Yeah.
And over here, we don't get listened to one bit, save for the European Super League scenario, but they're potentially trying to create that via the back door.
You tell me any other industry that ignores the wishes of its customers.
Yeah.
You know, and doesn't act in their customers' best interests. Now, the amount of money that they get from Sky, and you look at it, the Premier League do not have to charge their supporters anything, the clubs in there.
No, they don't.
And you look at the ticket prices, and rumours are coming through that as from next season, Arsenal are going to stop concessions. And I'm looking at it and I think, why are you doing that? You don't need to do that.
Don't worry, Tony, I'll pay the price of the adult one for you when we go there.
Pay for mine and all.
You ain't a concession, that is for sure.
It's nice to know you're a rich man now.
Well, you know.
Somebody hasn't done his tax returns properly.
Any chance that you might get around the drinks in?
We're a Premier League podcast now, mate. Just to round it off then on the PSR things. First and foremost, the argument that it's benefiting the big six. Well, Wolves will say, no, it's not benefiting the big six. You can sell players, you can have a good coach, you can have good recruitment, and you can still flourish. What are they, top half? Potentially going to be in Europe. Mm-hmm. So it is possible if you want to, that's for sure.
Just got to do it properly.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to do it properly. And just, so basically, our takeaways from this, the insolvency punishment has to be a hell of a lot bigger. The time frame of this all has to be an awful lot quicker. And, you know, ultimately, there's no sort of sympathy if you break rules that have been there for a fairly long period of time.
They can bring rules in damn quickly when they want to and change things. I mean, for argument's sake, look at it now. They brought a rule in now. You can't steal another club's, another community's football club. That's stopped bang now. So they can do it when they want to.
Yeah, they can. Obviously, that's not necessarily the Premier League, but yeah, they can. And they need to. They need to change it. They need to change it very quickly because it's just going to become a laughing stock post the end of the season. Unless Everton don't get another charge, but I think everyone is expecting them to. So let's move on. Mm-hmm. Independent regulation. We're all obviously for independent regulation. We've all spoken about it on this podcast in the past. However, alarm bell started to ring with me and James when we had Wilco on and he said the independent regulator won't have the power that you think it'll have. You know, he said it in black and white. We didn't really push him on it. Wasn't the time to push him on it, but we now know what he was meaning. Simply put, everyone in the outside world thinks that the independent regulator will completely and utterly clean the game up from top to bottom. Ultimately, the game's so far gone that it's not possible. So therefore, we are going to have an independent regulator. As James said earlier, that's been passed through government, and whether it's Labour or Conservatives that are in charge next year, or Labour in charge next year, It's going to happen. So what are the main things that we want this independent regulator, realistic, that we want this independent? The independent regulator is not going to be able to sort out the PSR issue in the Premier League. It's just not. That's a Premier League thing. That's for the 20 clubs to sort out. And you've got to hope that at some way, shape or form, enough clubs want change for change to happen. But one area where it can get involved is what you've both alluded to already, the trickle-down effect of the money from the top to the bottom. Now, the EFL have played their hand terribly in all of this, right? They've announced to the world that they've signed an overseas TV deal for X amounts of millions of pounds whilst they're in negotiations with the Premier League wanting trickle. Why the fuck would you do that? That's like me playing poker. Right, I've got pocket aces. Before the flops come out, I've shown that everyone on the table that I've got pocket aces. Go on, beat me now. They're going to fold before they start, right? Why the hell has Rick Parry announced that TV deal to the world while he's still trying to get money from the Premier League? However, he should still get money from the Premier League. That's the point of the matter. And that's the first thing that the independent regulator has to be able to sort out.
Oh, well, I think so. That's what we would all want to see as a team that 10 years ago were in the conference and having to be in the Football League, and at some point, no doubt, we'll be back there whenever that will be. We want to see the riches that are at the top of this division, at the top of the tree in English football, come down and help out the lower league clubs, particularly in the example that Tony mentioned earlier, where 10 clubs have voted against this £900 million package to go down to the Football League. And you can know who some of those are. They'll be the top teams that couldn't care less. They're running things anyway. But Forest are one of them. They've spent, as Dan said, 23 of the last 25 years in the second and third tier of English football. And one that we didn't touch on, because we were giving them a good ride because of how they treated us. And I have to make the distinction here. So we're talking Bournemouth. Now, Bournemouth fans, excellent. All of them, fantastic. Mm. Got a lot of time for them. But they're not the ones making this decision. They're the ownership of Bournemouth. And Bournemouth have spent over 100 years in the lower reaches of Football League. And now they find themselves in the Premier League and suddenly they're wanting to pull the ladder up. And it's that sort of thing that needs to be stamped out pretty damn quickly. And we need this money to trickle down. And let's be honest, if it happens in this parliament, it'd be the first time the Tories have ever promised and delivered trickle-down economics.
Absolutely. But, Tony, playing the view of the clubs, has the EFL not forced their hand by what I just said, by announcing their TV deal? Why the hell? They've basically pulled their own pants down by announcing that TV deal. When you're going into negotiations for money with another business, you don't let them know that you've got a cash mine on the way. Yes, there should be trickle-down money, but the second that they announced that, the figure that should have gone down from the Premier League is cut in half straight away. Why has he done? Why on earth have they done that? I am in complete sympathy with the EFL clubs. Listen, there's every chance as we sit here right now, we're an EFL club next season. We hope we're not. But there is every chance. There is still a 50-50 and a worst chance that we're an EFL club. So I hope that the money does trickle down. Yes, we're going to get parachute payments and all of that. But why the hell would you weaken your hand when you had the strongest hand going to the table?
It's naivety. Absolute naivety. You know,
and if you're a Premier League club and you hear that, you would do what these 10 have done, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. Whilst
we're condemning the Premier League clubs because they're rich, ultimately, someone's just
shared their wealth to the
world.
Kev, I still think that those clubs, the Premier League, it's disgusting. It's disgraceful. You know, and what they should be looking at is gone 900 million down to the EFL and good luck to you with your television deal. Now, I've already said it was naivety. Now, some of these people at the top running football, and you've got to blame Rick Parry for this. He's supposed to come from a really good business background and know what he's doing. And I'm absolutely flabbergasted. I honestly could not
believe my eyes when I saw them announce that TV deal whilst they're in negotiations with the Premier
League. Do you know, sometimes I look at it and I think, do you know what? We need really decent managers at the top of football, better than we've got at the moment. Let's go to Whipsnade Zoo and raid the chimps. I honestly, that's how I look at it.
You might be onto something.
Yeah, I'm like, for Christ's sake, you know, get your act together and do the decent thing and do the sensible thing. It beggars belief. It really, really does. I mean, as I said earlier, you've got these group of elite clubs at the top, and all it is protectionism. And I can't remember which of the clubs. I mean, it might have been Forest that came out and said it. I'm like, why should we vote for another club to take our place in the Premier League? And I thought, do you know what?
It's not really that, though, is it?
You have no inkling. You know, and one thing I've got to say, and I'm very proud of this, our football club voted in favour of it. So well done.
I mean, I do think in time, Tony, I mean, it's portrayed, isn't it, that it's bad that the gap between the Championship and the Premier League is too big. But eventually, that's going to benefit
rules happening in, because there's going to be so many clubs in the Premier League that are so fearful of going to the Championship because the gap is too big.
It doesn't need to be like that.
No, it doesn't.
And it shouldn't be like that.
And it shouldn't. You're right. But that gap is, there's going to be a growing number of clubs that are going to fear going down to the Championship. So they're going to start leaning on the side of the Championship because thinking, oh shit, we're only three bad results from being a Championship
club. And
then club.
That leads to overspending and breaking PSR.
Or it leads to more of them getting together. Bearing in mind, you only need, is it 14-6, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you only need 14 of these clubs. So let's say the top six get further and further away, and seventh, who, let's be honest, seventh right now are West Ham. Last season, they stayed up by the skin of their teeth. So we're not a million miles away from this now. They start fearing the worst, and I think, well, actually, we'll side with the EFL because that could be us and we could need that handout in a little while. Mm. But ultimately, I mean, the independent regulator will get money to come from the top to the bottom. That's going to be one of its roles. But the EFL are just not going to get the money from the Premier League that they want because their stupid chief executive has basically turfed the best hand into the middle of the table.
But there's a track record of this. When the Premier League was set up, right? Okay, there was a dirty deal in, you know, because I believe ITV had all but signed a deal, and it was Alan Sugar went out and phoned Sky and said, oh, this is the deal. And I thought, and I wonder what brown envelope he got out of that, allegedly.
Lord Sugar.
Yeah, but
I wouldn't want to challenge him on that.
Premier League actually said to the EFL, come in and we'll do a joint negotiation. And the EFL said, no, we'll negotiate our own deal. So it's not a new thing for the EFL to be bloody well incompetent. They've got a track record of it.
Yeah, the first thing the EFL needs to do is get some competency on board. Like you said, Rick Parry is meant to be it. I mean, hell, he ran Liverpool for however long and he made them sustainable. And he was part of the Premier League as well.
He was the CEO of the Premier League.
So how he's gone and put the EFL in this situation is beyond me, but hopefully the independent regulator get that sorted. What else can the independent regulator do? Realistically, you know, what can be installed in his or her powers when he or she gets put in place? I mean, we're still looking about 12 months away from it, aren't we? I think someone said that it's about 2 months from a job advert going out. Realistically, you're looking at a 6 month sort of period. What powers can be put on their table that's realistic that gets the fans into that German model back where we want it to be?
A consistent and fair level of punishments for all football. And the independent regulator could oversee all the disciplinary cases. Also, to put in place a proper test for fit and proper ownership.
See, for me, that should be number one on it.
That's part of it. Isn't that part of the movement anyway?
I think the independent regulator should look at multi-ownership of clubs and investigate permanent and loan transfers between those clubs. That's the only case we can think of. But you've also got the likes of Red Bull owning more than one club.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything underhand there, but you're looking at you're looking at possibilities, money laundering.
Stockpiling players.
You know, as well. And that's the other thing. I'd like to see an independent regulator bring in clubs are only allowed to have a certain amount of youth players. Okay. Sort out the elite player plan to stop Premier League players such as Chelsea stop buying players and going around and nicking the bright youngsters from other clubs, which happens. You know, and it's so disappointing. And one thing I have to say is the Tracy Couch report, our trust was the only one that did a presentation to that committee. And when this came out and I looked at it and I thought, do you know what? My fellow board members on the trust put a lot of hard work and time into that. That was for nothing.
Mm.
What a waste of bloody time.
Yeah.
What it looks like the regulator is going to do is create a licensing system whereby every club has to have a license to operate in its football league. That sounds like a step forward.
Yeah,
Yeah. I mean, it's not the top of the list for me that when they first come in, but yeah, it's
same as a Sunday League side playing their fees to be able to compete. Same thing.
Well, that's compulsory.
Grander scale, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? So that as part of this license, to buy your license, the owner's got to prove that presumably the license lasts you a year. I don't know. I'm only surmising. None of the details are really out there yet. But let's say it's for a year. So you've got to basically fund your club, show that you can fund your club for the year that you're getting your license for. And if you can't, you don't get your license. Now, what happens if you don't get your license? I suppose that's the next question. But at least if you get your license, you as a fan of, let's say, Reading right now, know that your club is going to be fine for that entire year. So at least you've got that kind of peace of mind in the background. Whereas now, if you're in League One or League Two, you're really only a bad sort of result, bad financial outcome away from going tits up. And we've seen it in all of these other clubs. Or you're chasing the dream and getting it wrong from going that. So from that point of view, this licensing system does sound like immediate progress.
Well, ultimately, what we're wanting to avoid, and it's what the Premier League teams forget, is another situation like Bury, where the guy who passed the fit and proper persons test, whatever that is these days, because it's nonsense, and had, I think I'm right in saying, a history of asset stripping companies. And that's what he did there. And that now Bury are sort of back on their feet, and I think they're back at Gig Lane as well. But they're starting way down the pyramid. They were in really good form at the time, and I think they just won a promotion, didn't they, the season before? They got kicked out of the Football League, and that's not fair on any fans. And you know, we were like, and that's hairs away from that happening to this club. But it's happened to too many. There's countless examples that have gone out of business. They just don't have football clubs anymore. Now that's not acceptable. Particularly when a new owner's come in, promised you the earth, when the ulterior motives are completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for as much as I take the piss out of Tony in jest, had he and a group of others not got together and realised what was going on at our club, we wouldn't be sat around this table because we wouldn't have a club to be talking about, or at least we would, but we'll have had to have done like AFC Wimbledon, Bury, Macclesfield and everyone else and gone right to the bottom and worked our way back up. So, yeah, we'll always be grateful for the trust for that. Because
you're in on it and all, Kev. You played your part in it.
Had it not have happened, then the club's gone. It's as black and white as that. Had the trust not formed, the club would have gone. So, yeah, we've got to protect against that. So the licensing system, that does sound like a good way forward. Then where else does the regulator go? I mean, you are kind of running out of things that you could do. One thing I would like the regulator to do is I would like the regulator to enforce a rule whereby there has to be some fan representation.
Yeah.
Now, I don't having had a fan rep on the board ourselves before 2020 came, I don't think it really necessarily works because they can just have meetings away from the fans rep. They wouldn't say that they didn't, but they can.
That's what
they?
Happened. That's what happened.
Yeah.
So I don't really think that works. So therefore, the fans representative has to come in the form of some sort of share, doesn't it? Be it a golden share, a shareholding like we have, image rights like we have, something along those lines to put something back in to the power of the fans. Now, out here at the Trust, we've got the image rights to Luton Town Football Club. Exactly. So,
that's one of my points.
So the name can't change, the colours can't change, the stadium can't change in terms of being relocated to Milton Keynes or anywhere else. Mascots and a few other really important things. None of this can change without the Trust say so. Well, the Trust won't say so. They'll pass it out to their members, and in turn, all Trust members will therefore have a say on the future of its club. And that's really important, isn't it? A regulator can make sure that every club owner gives its fans something along those lines.
Just to give you an example of that, Kev, remember when we were in League One and we were about to kick off the league? I got a phone call from Gary Sweet, and he said that there was some issue or that with the kit, and they couldn't get the right colour shorts and socks.
And he said, he asked, would the Trust have a problem if we played in all orange? And we had a meeting, we had a broad meeting. We're fine. We gave them that permission. So that shows you how it works. And you've got, you know, you look at it, you've got, as I said earlier, these owners coming in who have no idea. You had the guy at Cardiff who wanted to change the kit to red.
He did.
Yeah, that's right. And then you've got the guy at Hull who wanted to call it Hull Tigers.
Yeah.
And I look at rugby league and I say Warrington and, you know, Warriors and that. And I think these names are absolutely fucking stupid, you know, because I am a traditionalist when it comes to football. And I look at it. And the other thing that I would like to see is I'd like to see the regulator have a procedure so that fan organisation, so we as a trust, other clubs don't have trust, they have supports clubs, can go to the regulator if they've got an issue or something they're worried about. Not individual fans, because you know individual fans can get a bee in their bonnet about stupid things.
The independent regulator doesn't need to know that their goalkeeper is an absolute shitter.
Yeah. We've got legitimate, as an organisation, we've got legitimate concerns about our ownership. We can go to the independent regulator who can listen to us. Yes, we'd have to have a pretty good case, but then they would conduct a proper investigation. And as I said earlier, this is one of the things that fans could have some power in. And I think if they did it properly and brought a regulator in who had proper teeth and proper powers, the fans would be all before, you know.
Reading being the current example.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they've the protests, but they were just about to sell their training ground to Wickham.
Yeah.
I think.
And they'd have wasted the time of that. And all.
I mean, reading between the lines of the Wickham statement, they pulled out because of, being in hot water about it, but that shouldn't ever get to that stage, ever.
I mean, to be fair, if Wickham were involved, if the deal went as quickly as their football matches, then the deal wouldn't happen for a good year or two, would it? So Reading would have nothing to worry about on that. What would you like the independent regulator to offer up?
Pretty much what Tony said, really. I think fans need more of a say. We're lucky with our club that we do get
How would you like fans to have more of a say? As I say, a fan on the board, we've been there. I can tell you from experience, it does not work. That's just not going to work.
No.
If you've got an unscrupulous owner, he'll find a way around that. No problem whatsoever.
Can I just say that fans representative was Kelvin Dunn.
Yeah.
And he got unmerciful stick from supporters at the time.
Unjustified.
Well, yeah. And Kelvin was a decent guy. He went into that. I mean, I wasn't part of the Trust board at that time because I stepped back.
Right.
But I knew Kelvin, and Kelvin was 100% guy, straight down the line, good guy.
There couldn't have been anyone better for that role.
Exactly.
And they still excluded
him. And unfortunately, that soured the relationship that Kelvin had with the club. And, you know, he, as I said, he was a top bloke, Kelvin, and he wanted to do it with the supporters' interests. But when you're up against, you know, an unscrupulous owner like J10, all they did was form a holding company.
Yeah. Was that the period he was involved?
Yes.
The J10, say no more.
That's why I say fan reps on the board.
Exactly.
Well, that's a no-no for me. It sounds great, but there are just so many ways around it. It's possible. There is no way around if a club is forced to give the image rights to its fans.
Yeah.
Its fans group. There is no way around that then. There is absolutely nothing that our football club can do with these image rights, of which they are significant things at this football club, the most significant things. And we didn't pay for them. We didn't really ask for them. They were kind of offered to us as, you know, sort of thank you, for the want of a better word, for what the Trust did pre 2020 days. But if every team's image rights go to the leading supporters group of that team, then immediately so much of the, not all of the problems, but so much of the problems that clubs face is sorted out. And also it would give the fans so much more of a feeling of being part of their club. We have it. You know, we feel more part of our club by knowing that the Trust
have our backs.
Right. Because our club is run by essentially supporters.
But the other thing the independent regulator should do is, you know, make sure that clubs and stadiums are all made community assets, because then that also limits what a rogue owner can do.
Yeah.
Anything to add for what it can have, Jimbo?
I think the community asset thing is hugely key, because, you know, as much as we talk about having good owners now in 2020, it's always been talk of, and they talk themselves of being stewards of the club. What really is important is, yeah, the naming and the badge and the colours and the club, the place where you go and worship your club is the football ground.
Yeah.
And that needs to be protected, because, again, you go back to the Bury example, and they were just kicked out of their ground. Then their football club was taken away from them. And then can you imagine that? I mean, I don't think it gets covered enough, because those football fans got stripped of their passion, you know, and that's not acceptable. So to have stadiums put into that category, I think, is a massive ring fence around it and huge protection. You know, I'm into music, and music venues are being talked of in that way, grassroots music venues, because the minute they go, they're never coming back, because there are now, fortunately, in terms of music, laws which mean if a music venue is around and then you move into a nearby new residential place and complain about the music, well, it's fuck you, because you knew what you were getting into. But if it goes, you can't then put it back into an area where people live, because then they've got the rights. So it's not quite the same sort of thing, but it gives protection to those things that people cherish.
Can I complain about the music at Stockwood Park when Coldplay headlined the Radio 1 Big Weekend?
That's why I'm not going.
You could do.
I think I'd be playing about the whole thing.
One song in particular might get an interesting reaction.
I mean, all we really want to see from a football club, when you support a football club, all you want from your owner is someone who can put a budget aside for a manager that sanctions buying and selling players, keeping the football club running at a reasonable level, preferably profitable. I know why they don't do it that way, because it's a tax dodge. If they look like they're making money, we'll just go and buy a player and it sort of, so they don't have to pay tax on it.
Allegedly.
No, it happens. That's all you want off a chairman. You don't want someone to, like we said about the whole guy and the Cardiff guy, oh, I'm going to change the colour. Like, imagine Gary suddenly, oh, we're going to play in yellow and call ourselves the Hornets next year. Fuck off. that would never gain ground the same way as it
would. He would be lynched.
Oh, he'd be hunted down. Mm. Yeah. It'd be decorated into every wall that he's got in his house as well.
I'd like to see the regulator do. I'd like to see that the club's accounts are checked every quarter. Not every year, every quarter. And I'd like the regulator to make sure they pay their bloody tax bills on time.
Yeah.
And what I think of things. And I think if a prospective owner is looking to buy a club, I think they should have to put up a substantial bond that's held.
Well, that's their license, isn't it? Yeah, that would be the license.
But they should put money there. So if they do go into trouble, or they look like they could go into receivership, that money can be used to offset some of the debts.
Mm.
Okay. If they sell, there's no issues, they get that bond back. Because that's the only way you get, like with the, and I'm talking with the Premier League, you know, you're talking about putting a bond up of bloody multi-millions. With League Two, perhaps just a million or whatever, if you can do it. But, you know, if you're serious about buying a club, running it the right way and want to do the right things, you should put things up, a bond like that. You know, and I haven't finished yet.
Do you mean to have a plan?
Come on, get a wriggle on. It's kick-off.
Right. In an ideal world, this is two wishes for me. In an ideal world, and this will probably never, ever happen, but one thing I'd like to see is the Premier League reabsorbed back into the Football League. So you're talking about one organisation, which is run for the whole of football for the right reasons.
You agree with that 100%. Not going to happen.
You're right. It's not happening.
No. And also, I would like, and I know this is, you know, couldn't happen, an end to foreign ownership.
And also, when owners come in and buy clubs, they can't do things like what the Glazers have done, where they offset the debt and put it on the club so they don't own them. You know, they don't pay any money. That should be totally made against the rules.
No, there's a few clubs do that. Coventry used to. They're on leverage
buying, isn't that what it's called? I'm not sure. Yeah,
they just put it into loads of debt, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? We're singing from the same hymn sheet here, Jim. This is unbelievable.
That's why you're not coming back on again this season.
he has matured since I've been away.
It's got better, hasn't he?
I don't know if that's
I was thinking
if that's a compliment or an insult.
It's coming from Tony, I'm not sure.
So there are just a few things that we think and hope that the independent regulator is given the power to achieve. We will cover the independent regulator so many more times on this podcast because it's important to us as a trust. As Tony said, we represented ourselves at the Tracy Crouch report, and so we feel kind of it into this sort of thing really, really deeply. So we'll cover this in many a deep dive. As I say, we're probably a year away from it being actually put into application. So there's plenty more that we can say on it. Let's finish this deep dive off with a look at football, because that's what we are here for. Since we last did a podcast, James, well, for the second international break running, the town ain't played a game, gone up a league place. Happy days.
End the season now.
Yeah, I mean, that would be nice. Absolutely. Ultimately, we're 9 games left now. We have completely got our destiny in our own hands, and we can't ask for any more than that.
No, it's exactly what you wanted, isn't it? I mean, it looked for about 89 minutes against Forest that wasn't going to happen, but Luke Berry's goal has he's put a different sheen on it now, and then obviously less than 24 hours later, they get the 4 points taken off them that makes us swap places. So that is manna from heaven, really, at this stage, and it's got a couple of games coming up that are going to be pretty tough, but There's 5 in there, that are 6 that are hugely winnable and almost must winnable. But did we ever think it was going to be any easier? We were all thinking it's going to go down to the wire, and it probably will.
Yeah, I mean, it will do, Tony, won't it? Luton in the top flight, we only ever stay up on the last day of the season.
We never go down on the last day of the season.
That's how it is. Unfortunately, there's no derby to beat on the last day of the season this time around. But there are still clubs. I mean, When we were buying all this gear to get all this podcast for the Premier League ready, we would all have taken a position of, you know, going into March the 30th, being outside the bottom three and in control of our own fate.
Definitely. Like I always say, you know, it's a successful season if you finished fourth from bottom on goal difference. And I'd quite happily take that. But having said that, if we do get relegated, it's not the end of the world.
It's not.
You know, our club is bigger than that to us. You know, and we will come back stronger. We will come back stronger. And we've learnt what the Premier League is about. I'm not talking about all the money and behind it. I'm talking about on the field and how to play. You know, and we'll be more ready for the inbuilt bias towards the top six next time, and I can see us challenging again at the top of the Championship next season. I don't think our squad would be decimated as some people think. I think some players will stay to get us back there. But we all hope that we stay up. We're quite capable of doing it. I all the injuries haven't helped, and it's so annoying and frustrating that it seems to be all the defenders, you know, that it's come down with, or a defensive midfielder, you know, and so we're leaking goals. We can score goals, you know, we've done that, and what is it, 18 matches on the bounce that we've scored goals in, and we're the first promoted side to do that. So if we tighten up at the back and we've got some players back, I think we're in a really good shout of doing it, because there's 3 games coming up that realistically we're going to look and we'll say 0 points, And if we get a point, it's a bonus. I think that's the way to look at it. But there's some other really winnable games there. So if we can beat the likes of Brentford, Bournemouth and Everton at home, you know, I honestly think we can do it. But as we all said, it Luton never ever do it the easy way. You know, I've been here quite a few times in the past because I've been watching the house longer than you. I know it's hard to believe
because you're old.
Yeah, well, it's hard to believe.
I've done
at my age.
Joe Payne's best mate,
and it makes it all that sweeter. The only annoying thing is if this points deduction thing, as we've discussed earlier, goes on longer.
I'll tell you what it will do, though. I mean, if Luton stay up anyway, regardless of what's happened, if you're saying this at the beginning of the season, Luton stay up, it's already the greatest fairy tale in football. And if Luton can stay up with, you know, half a squad and do it without the points deductions coming into it, then that would never be beaten.
You're wrong. It's not the greatest fairy tale in football because that bloke on BT after the Champions League final last season said it wasn't. Don't you remember? What an idiot he was. If we do stay up, Dan, one of the reasons why we stay up this season is the form of Thomas Kaminski. Now, we went into the season largely without, we went into pre-season largely without a goalkeeper. Ethan Horvath had disappeared back to Notts Forest. I don't think anyone was too disappointed with that, but there was lots of hoo-ha in the summer, wasn't there? Was it going to be Asmir Begovic? Was it going to be Tom Heaton? Was it going to be someone else? And then it was Thomas Kaminski. And most people thought he would just be number two. But then when Tim Krul signed, we realised very quickly he was going to be number one. And he's proved why he's number one. He's been absolutely exceptional. He's obviously won Save of the Month in November for that double save against Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
He might not have got the clean sheets that maybe he should have done, but there aren't many clean sheets doing the rounds in the Premier League, full stop.
No.
But his saves earn an awful lot of the points that we do get.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think for every cock-up or gift goal that we give out, there's one or two Kaminski saves to counteract that. And that's where you talk about the fine margins, and he has been the difference in pretty much all the games this season. He's been absolutely phenomenal. And what was he, £2.5 million? Absolutely pisses all over what a lot of clubs in the Premier League would pay for a goalkeeper. I'm looking at Burnley. In fairness to Trafford, he's a young keeper and he'll become better for it.
It's cruel to mock the afflicted.
But I think he's been chucked under the bus a little bit, Trafford there. So do feel for him a tiny bit. But I'm glad that we didn't spunk £20 million on a goalkeeper. When you look at it, no, £2.5 million for a goalkeeper, and he's just made his Belgian debut as well.
£2.5 million for like the fifth choice if you go by all the transfer rumours, isn't it really?
I looked at Belgium's squad. I didn't realise they'd called up four goalkeepers and he was one of them, and I thought, well, he's not getting a game, is he? And then he gets a game. But it's just testament to the work Luton are doing and the faith they have in the players when Mick and the team are told, right, go and find me a goalkeeper. Right, okay. They literally leave no stone unturned. They look at every single goalkeeper in that league, throughout the Football League. Sometimes they go abroad with it as well. And they make sure they get the best one for the best money that benefits the football club the best. You don't have to spend the most money to get a quality goalkeeper. And again, we've proven that. And we've done that with a lot of players in certain positions. You know, you don't have to spend a shitload of money to get a good player that's good enough to play in the Premier League. We've got a squad of them, I think, as a squad.
Yeah.
It was important that we got a shot stopper, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone wants a complete goalkeeper who's, you know, plays with his feet and everything else. But the shot stopping part was important because, law of averages, we were going to be facing an awful lot more shots than we were in the Championship.
The Forest, the Villa games, they'd have beaten us quite handsomely if it hadn't been for Kaminski, if we're being honest.
You know, I mean, not to chuck Horvath under the bus, but it could have been a lot worse in some of the games than what it has been.
I said it in the last podcast, I can't remember a game where he hasn't had to make 3, 4, 5 good saves to keep us in it. It was always going to be the case, but they've found a real gem there.
Yeah, they have. A gem that we hope to have on the podcast with us before the Tottenham game later this week. So keep your eye out for that. If everything goes to plan in the remainder of his international duty, we'll get Thomas on the podcast. Another player who could be important between now and the end of the season, who's really starting to flourish
game by game is Tahith Chong. Now, he's one that we did sign with Premier League experience, only little bits of Premier League experience, but Premier League experience nevertheless. And we're starting to see that, aren't we? Because we knew he was quality because he tore us a new one when he was at Birmingham. But now he's starting to tear Premier League teams a new one. And if he can do that for nine more games and his work be on the positive outcome of five of those games, Luton stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, he turned into one of the outstanding performers in this run where he's so decimated by injuries. I mean, it's almost by necessity, but the fact that he's come on shows the improvement, because we were having this debate back and forth quite a lot of the time in the early podcasts of this season. Is he a starter or is he best off the bench? And he was best off the bench, let's be honest, because every time he got a shot in the first 11, then it never quite worked out for him. And then he went back and tried again. So it speaks volumes to the coaching that's going on at the football club, I think. And it does for most players. I can't think of many players who have gone backwards. Most of them all improved. The only one probably is Giles, and he's gone because he just wasn't getting a look in. And that's a real big tip of the hat to the coaching staff and what they're doing with these players, because that is what we knew they'd have to do. If you're going to buy players that don't have the experience or aren't going to cost multi-million pounds and be Premier League ready like that, then you've got to coach them to be so. And, you know, if Luton stay up with this team that hardly anyone gave any chance to, Garth Crooks and the like, Alan Shearer, and they're all starting to change their tune. Well, Garth Crooks, and he's sticking to his guns, but they're all starting to change their tune. Or maybe they changed it long ago. I think well before Christmas, they were all changing their tune about Luton Town and the possibilities there. Out of the three that came up, they're clearly the outstanding favourites to be the one that stays up at the moment. And, you know, like you said at the start of this segment, it's in Luton's hands.
Decent outlay for Tahith Chong by our sort of standards. At the time, he was a club record signing, wasn't he?
Yep.
Like I said, we knew what we was getting from that Birmingham game. But the more the season's going on, the more he's becoming a really important factor. He's scoring goals now as well. I think he's two in his last four. Might be five. I might have missed a game out in amongst them, the Bournemouth and the Villa games.
Yeah.
So they're key goals as well. I mean, obviously the opening goal at Bournemouth and the sort of first one on the setback to the recovery against Villa. So he's really not just playing well, but he's impacting the games how we all want him to impact the games. Obviously, his goal against Liverpool's already earned us a point, should have earned us 3 points, but only one. So, and he's getting better. So with two more months to come, we should still get a better Chong to keep on delivering the goods.
I think so. And obviously, the more Chong plays, the better he'll get, because you don't get better by not playing. I think the problem was with him before is maintaining consistency. You spoke about when he tore as a new one playing for Birmingham. From the Birmingham City supporters I do know that saw him regularly, they were like, take him, he's not consistent enough, good luck. Good luck. And he's shutting those people up now, and I think Rob's managed it quite well, the situation, because I know Chong wasn't particularly happy at the lack of game time earlier on in the season, and we spoke about it earlier that when he was given the chance wasn't really taking it. So he came out and then had to go back in, and he's proving to everybody what a good player he can be. And it's just about maintaining them levels and then going to the next level for him. And I back him. I do back him, and he'll become one of the important players as the season comes to a close.
He is quality.
There's no doubt in that. He's just maintaining the consistency.
The only thing for me that I find a little bit disappointing is he does now and again have a tendency to go down too easily.
Which I've called him out for on this podcast a couple of times.
I think it's fine if he's getting the free kicks for it, but a lot of the time he's not.
A lot of it's trying to play the game though, isn't it? Because you see it, I mean, where I sit in the enclosure, I see no end of players going down, like their legs falling off.
You've got to think he's come from Man United though, and when you're a Man United player and you fall over, you get a free kick. So,
and you surround the referee when there's a free kick given against you.
But when you don't, like a Brentford away, ball's in the back of your net, you know, you do have to balance it out.
It's learning, though, isn't it? It's all part of maturing as a footballer.
He's still a young player, 23.
Yeah, I mean, I think
he's in this run of games that he's currently in, he's showing that he is maturing and improving. And, you know, if...
Don't get me wrong, I like him. Yeah, I think
I do. Really, I was critical at the start.
His positioning is great and he's quick.
Quicker than he looks. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't look particularly aerodynamic with that Barnett, does he? But he gets
and if you look at him,
his
game, and particularly as you said, Kev, with him scoring goals, he gets in positions, you know, and he's intelligent.
Well, even on Saturday against Notts Forest, if Berry didn't score, who was right next to him to put Chong the ball in there. The back of the net? Chong. So.
He swung for it already.
And don't forget as well, at Bournemouth, he had a goal chalked off as well.
So he you know, he's getting into great positions. So he'll be a key factor in, the survival bid. Normally we'd finish a podcast with score predictions. There's no game to do a score prediction to. So I will just ask, well, the panel, if you want to call them that. Yes or no, are Luton Town a Premier League team in August next season?
Of course.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, it's a yes from me too. I've never not thought that we would be in the Premier League next season, and these deductions are only going a long way to dealing with that. That is it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks to everyone around this table for their thoughts. Thanks to you for what...
Got our names, isn't he?
It's too long, mate. Too long. Well, I forgot his name. I ain't seen him for so long.
I'm back, so that's why it's so long.
We'll see you in seven.
Interesting things to say.
I had a lot to say. There's no bloody time.
When are you saying?
Yeah. We'll have to get him back on to say those interesting.
We'll have to do one
things.
Just on his own, I think.
Yeah.
Just let him waffle in a corner.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
Thanks to, I will give them their names checked, Tony, James and Dan for their company over the last period. Thank you to you for watching or listening, however it is that you've consumed this podcast. Thanks to the Hightown Club for staging our studio as they always do, to Sean Grant and the Wolfgang for our intro music, and to Ed Smith Creative for all the designs and things that you see on set. Until next time, which is a preview of football and Tottenham Hotspur away, from the four of us, come on, your Hatters.
Great to be back.
Believe it! We are Premier League! Yes!
I love this town. I love this town. I love this town. You know what I love about this town? It's actually you. Everyone in it has got these massive souls.
We're Luton people, and that's what we care about.